If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. I'm Rohan Akhmi, joined today by not one, but two Sports Illustrated senior writers. He is the New York Times best-selling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. And he has been writing about basketball for two decades now. Chris Mannix is on the show as well. Guys, how is your summer going so far?
Me and Chris is having the stare down, the Diddy stare down.
No one was prepared. No one was prepared for a friendly intro on all fronts. Just completely shook up the vibe.
It's been like 12 minutes since we spoke to each other last. He's like, how's summer been?
Yeah, I think I'm good with small talk for the moment, Rohan. I think I'm cool.
Checks out. All right, guys. A ton of things I actually want to get to on this podcast today. Free agency starting just a couple days from now, from when we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. And it'll be an interesting period. I'm not expecting necessarily a ton of movement, just the limited cap space around the league. I want to start with a team that we have actually not discussed too much so far this summer. And that's the Milwaukee Bucks, who were the number one overall seed in the NBA last season. Obviously exited in the first round, changed their coach, firing Mike Budenholzer, who won a championship with them, obviously, in 2021. This is a sneaky pivotal offseason for Milwaukee, and I don't know that it's necessarily being given enough attention, just how important this offseason is for them. Obviously, that team has a pretty old core to begin with, but Brook Lopez is kind of a major free agent. A lot of teams being linked to him, Houston, chief among them, I would say, a team with a lot of cap space who could use someone like Brook Lopez. Chris Middleton is a free agent. I think most people expect him to go back to Milwaukee, even though, again, he's someone who's going to be attractive to a lot of teams. Mannix, I'll start with you. Do you get the sense that there's any maybe hesitation or concern? I guess other teams wouldn't be concerned, but what's the vibe around the league about Milwaukee's position moving forward?
Short term, I think they're still in a pretty good position. Chris Middleton opted out of the final year of that contract, but guys don't opt out of that last year of a deal of, what, $36, $37 million, whatever he was going to get, without knowing that money is out there. And I think it's out there with Milwaukee. You know, the Bucks understand, you know, the chemistry between Middleton and Giannis is very good. Like, they won a championship together. And you know, even though they might be overpaying for him on a four-year deal that could be worth somewhere between 120 and 140, I think they're willing to do it. So I would expect Chris Middleton to be back in Milwaukee on a new deal relatively quickly in free agency. Brook Lopez might be that's a little bit more difficult, I think. You know, Lopez loves it in Milwaukee, has in many ways reinvented himself in Milwaukee, has been a pivotal player alongside Giannis. Like, as has been said many times before, Brook Lopez might be the greatest box out guy in the NBA. Like, his ability to clear space for Giannis and others in the paint is a valuable commodity to Milwaukee. The question is going to be, you know, what does the market look like for Brook Lopez? What kind of deal can he command? I mean, Brook Lopez is 35 years old right now, which means I think he's limited to what, a 3-year deal? Because of the over 38 rule.
That's correct.
Right. So, you know, is there a team out there willing to go like 3 years, $60 million or more for Brook Lopez? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that right now. I know Milwaukee wants him back. I think Brook Lopez would like to be back, but this is probably the last big contract of Lopez's career, and he's going to look to maximize that value, that's for sure. So I think Middleton almost certainly will be back. Lopez, I think it's better than 50-50 that he's back, but that one is certainly more complicated.
Herring, before I go to you, I just want to throw out there, the Bucks, you know, they're kind of flirting with the second apron, especially if they do bring back Brook Lopez. They have this bird rights on. So let's say his market does get up to around $20 million. Houston, for example, could throw a de-escalating contract at Brook Lopez, give him a huge number in the first year. And then it kind of hamstrings Milwaukee a little bit that, you know, Jay Crowder didn't play for them, but he's going to be a free agent. They have Bobby Portis signed up, but they don't really have a brilliant supporting cast, I would say. You see what teams are doing, loading up around the league. Herring, what would a Brook Lopez loss mean on the floor for Milwaukee, considering how important he's been to their defensive identity over the years, and the fact that there are very few centers in the league that can defend and shoot at his level?
It's a big loss for them if he doesn't come back. It's part of the reason that I think, and we've said this before, like it's a challenging spot for smaller market teams to do this, but when you have a generational talent on your team, and they saw the light, you know, the year that Giannis, when they were trying to lock Giannis in before the Supermax situation, they got Drew Holiday. They were trying to go out and get Bogdanovich as well. They fell short of that because of, you know, the tampering stuff and what have you. But they knew going in, just like they did when they traded all those picks for Drew Holiday, this is the one thing you make sure you don't screw up. You don't screw up when you've got a generational talent on your team. And frankly, the Middleton calculation is part of that. I would imagine that Lopez is the same way, where you fundamentally lose something that, given your cap situation, you can't just replace. You can't just go out. And teams have always been prone to make mistakes when you've got a bird right sort of player on your team. You can't replace them salary cap wise. You can go above the cap to keep them, but there's no replacing them with other talent on the market. You just kind of have to bite the bullet, knowing that this is someone that Giannis would prefer to play with. And frankly, and some people won't like it, this would be them largely running back the roster they have. You know, they'll switch out some spare parts at the end of the rotation, end of the roster. But this was a team that I think would probably like to view it as more or less a fluke that they lost in the first round because Giannis was hurt. Now, was that the case? Giannis still played a chunk of that series. This is a team that obviously gave Milwaukee problems anyway.
They were outscored with him on the floor.
Right. So I don't think it's quite that simple, but also it becomes a math question of where do you get this production, whether it's Middleton and the role that he plays on this team, the unique role he plays on this team is a guy that sometimes can take the ball out of Giannis's hands, but also plays well with them in the pick and roll, a guy that defends, but a guy that hasn't stayed healthy. How do you produce? How do you get someone that can produce at his level, given that you wouldn't have the money to replace him necessarily? You couldn't use his salary slot to replace him. And with Brook, it might be harder. Like, he might be the more irreplaceable of the two. It sounds probably crazy to some people to say that, but like you said, 3-point shooter, and you know, and let's not lose sight of the fact that he developed into that very quickly. I wouldn't say overnight, but pretty much. And also has developed into someone that can do more than just drop, can do that, but also is a defensive player of the year candidate, you know, with his rim protection ability and his ability to just kind of make stuff difficult for offensive players. So I think you just kind of have to do it. And, you know, maybe that's an uncreative answer, but it's, I think you kind of just have to and hope that you guys are good enough. And when you have the best record in the league, I think you can at least roll the dice with that sort of situation.
Yeah, I just think they're in an interesting position. You know, the Giannis clock is kind of always ticking. He's going to be extension eligible again soon. He has a player option at the end of his deal. He could be a free agent as soon as 2025. I'm not trying to start the Giannis may leave again conversation, but they're in a fascinating...
No, it's already started.
It is.
It's
That's the thing. Started. Yeah. You have to... I mean, teams have to be... The worst phrase is monitoring it, but teams have to have their, you know, kind of ears perked up watching what's happening in Milwaukee, right, Mannix?
They are. Most of the major market teams, beginning with New York, are paying attention. But, you know, Giannis has never indicated he wants to be anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And despite all the things we just said, if they bring back Chris Middleton, if they bring back Brook Lopez, they're going to be, you know, a presumptive favorite to be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and maybe the presumptive favorite in this new NBA to win the whole thing. You know, you're right. It's not as simple as Giannis was injured against Miami, and he did play in three of those games. They lost all three. But, you know, I don't know. You know, he missed most of one of the games that he played in because of the injury, and I have no idea what kind of limitations it placed on him, you know, for the rest of that series. So, I don't know. I'm not overreacting to Milwaukee's problems at the moment. I think if they're willing to spend, and there's nothing in their recent history that suggests that they're not, they know full well that if they don't spend, that they're running the risk that Giannis will look at it and say, well, you know, you're not giving me the talent I need to succeed at, and that could become problematic. But if they do spend, they're going to be in a great position. I think they've still got two or three years left of high-level Chris Middleton. I think you've probably, based on what we've seen, got at least 2 years left of pretty high-level Brook Lopez, whose game has aged exceptionally well. You've got some good players in that rotation, and Giannis is still arguably the best player in the NBA. So, yeah, I mean, teams will you know, be quietly rooting for the implosion of Milwaukee, but barring that, I don't think there's an overwhelming reason to be concerned about Giannis forcing his way out of town.
For sure. I will say, for what it's worth, the last time they lost to Miami in the playoffs, they came back and won a championship the next season. So they're going to be very good if everyone is healthy. But Lopez is, I think, low-key a swing player in this free agency. I want to move on, just really hop around the league here. You know, Herring, you wrote this week about players you'd maybe like to see have a change of scenery. Mannix, you wrote this week about what you're hearing about different players around the league. I want to try to touch on as much of these names as possible. I want to start with DeAndre Ayton. I think it was Mark Stein who first reported that Ayton was maybe on the table in a draft night deal that was sent him to the Mavericks. The Mavs were obviously wheeling and dealing that night, looking for help in their front court. I think one thing we've all kind of wondered, you know, Chris Haynes reported the Suns are indeed going to move forward with DeAndre Ayton. I mean, who knows at this point? I think we're all wondering, after the Suns acquired Bradley Beal, will they keep DeAndre Ayton, or will they try to move him for a couple contracts? Is there a team that you think out there that makes sense for DeAndre Ayton for the Suns to try to move him to, and or do you think they should try to hold on to him? What do you think is the best route forward for Phoenix?
I mean, I'll start. I think that Dallas really is. Yeah, I don't want to say it's the only team that's interested in DeAndre Ayton, but they're in a position where they're desperate enough to make a big move for him. And if it's true, as Mark Stein reported, that it was the inclusion of JaVale McGee, which, by the way, would punctuate a fairly catastrophic relationship with JaVale McGee, which apparently included, you know, the Mavericks deciding with JaVale McGee over Bruce Brown last year. If that's what, you know,
I think they gave him like 3 years. That was a wild contract.
Yeah. Like they gave him a new deal, and then they declared him a starter, and that, you know, anyone with eyeballs knew that wasn't really going to work. I don't believe that the Suns are now fully committed to DeAndre Ayton. I think the Suns are looking at their roster and saying, yeah, DeAndre Ayton certainly works with this group, especially when you factor in that Frank Vogel's defenses have always been built around a superior big, especially a superior defensive big, whether it's Roy Hibbert in Indiana, Anthony Davis, and to a lesser degree, Dwight Howard in Los Angeles. Frank Vogel wants DeAndre Ayton there. He's told me as much publicly. But if you can get two or three rotation pieces in exchange for DeAndre Ayton, you're probably better off, because right now the Suns have six players under contract and virtually no flexibility to add.
All minimum players. Add minimum players in free agents.
And I think there's some probably some levers they can pull to do a couple things, but it really is. This is it. Like, this is what they're You know, I saw a report out there that, you know, ring chasers are going to want to go to Phoenix. That might be wishful thinking. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know who that is. And it just feels like the buyout market all over again, where you get these minimum guys that turn out to be a little bit less than what you hoped.
They also will not have access to the buyout market, by the way, this season. Who they got is who they got to roll with.
Yeah, look, they're looking at minimum guys. So the point is, if there's a deal out there that can net them two or three rotation players for DeAndre Ayton, I think they're going to take it. I don't think that offer is there right now. I don't know if the Dallas offer post Kyrie Irving signing, because that's going to happen, is going to rematerialize. But I would not, you know, set up DeAndre Ayton's locker in Phoenix just yet. That's my way of putting it. I would not. That's just my read.
You wouldn't hang the jersey up?
I wouldn't hang the jersey just yet.
I'm kind of...
How about this? I wouldn't put his... last year? Remember, I was there last year when Kevin Durant was traded, and they were putting up that signage outside Talking Stick Arena with Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. That signage obviously is coming down, or has come down already. I would not put up a new sign just yet with DeAndre Ayton's face on it.
Don't let the marketing team get involved. This is completely random, but I was at a Suns game last year where DeAndre Ayton, he likes to take a half-court shot to end his warm-up, and he couldn't hit it. And he had to have been out there for like 18 minutes, to the point where several Suns players and employees were gathered around a TV watching him take the shot.
This needs to be embedded into a profile. This needs to be a lead of a story.
I'm kind of surprised the Suns didn't do that Tim Hardaway trade, because I believe it was Hardaway, McGee, and one more player. And for a couple of reasons, I think they should have taken on JaVale McGee. Yes, you know, he's got one more year on the contract after this one, but they kind of need those salary slots. They need players making a little bit of money that they can include in future trades. They need big man depth if they're going to trade Ayton. I mean, you could do worse than McGee as a backup big. We've seen him work in different contexts on good teams. Kevin Durant knows that. And Tim Hardaway would have been a useful player. The problem is, again, it's like, how many like wing shooters is this team going to acquire before they try to go for someone who's a little bit more defensive focused? What did you think of that rumor, Herring, and what do you kind of make of the Ayton situation overall?
I mean, I think multiple things. One, absolutely, if you're able to get the right, what you consider to be the right guys to slot in his money. I keep thinking about the Kristaps Porzingis trade, because that was more about taking the flexibility, getting more flexibility for a big contract when he was traded from the Mavs to the Wizards. It was about getting Dinwiddie, you know, essentially just getting two players. I think it was him and Bertans. Mm-hmm. That you just wanted to do that just to get flexibility.
And both those contracts have since been moved. Yeah.
Right. And it was always more about that. It was just that this isn't really working and we don't really see it, but we can't trade. It's really hard to trade this one guy, so let's break it into parts and also try to bolster our rotation that way. The Suns desperately need more rotation than what they have, more depth than what they have. I don't think Ayton is necessarily like a huge difference maker for them. It's been a while since he's really been that in a playoff setting. The way I think about it was just looking at, okay, they added Durant last year. Durant obviously is going to change the ecosystem of your offense. DeAndre Ayton's usage rate plummeted quite a bit when they added Durant, which could have been expected. So now you not only add Durant, now you've got Beal, and Beal's replacing essentially Chris Paul. Chris Paul was the pick and roll partner with Ayton. So it's like Chris Paul's also not someone that's taking a ton of shots. So that ecosystem, when you also throw in Devin Booker into it, obviously, DeAndre Ayton might not get many shots at all, really. And yeah, he's okay on defense. Like Chris was saying, he's workable defensively. He has good moments defensively. He's had better than expected moments against elite centers defensively. I'm not taking that from him. But the reason you want him out there a lot of time is for offense. And sure, you would love to have him as your fourth option offensively. But one, who's feeding him the ball? I think that's one of the big question marks for this team, is like, who's going to be the point guard on this team? And secondly, if he's your fourth option and he was I mean, no one's ever said it, but like if he's potentially unhappy with his role, his dwindling role in an offense when he's reaching his prime, why go with that? Like, why not just swap him for something else for multiple parts if you can get that? You know, we can quibble about whether or not the Dallas offer would have been best. The Suns know JaVale McGee because he was in the organization. They might not want that exact fit. And like you said, Tim Hardaway is not really defending anybody. So that wouldn't necessarily be my favorite trade either, but I would be very itchy to kind of not just giving him away for anything, but I would love to get rid of Ayton if I'm the Suns to try to find some home for him and get back a couple of rotation guys to just deepen a roster that has no depth to it whatsoever.
I want to give Ayton credit though for being the anchor of that defense, because they were top 10 the last 3 years. That 64 mm-hmm. win season, they were top three. Not like he has great defenders around him or ever really has. I think Chris Paul's defense. Yeah.
Chris Paul's defense can be overrated. Was there.
Mikal Bridges was there, no question. Best perimeter defender, arguably in the league. But you need a defense. You need a guy at the rim. And besides Bridges, what are we talking about? I do think Chris Paul's defense has slipped in recent years. I don't think Devin Booker is a great defender. Kevin Durant gets there, only plays a handful of games. They still stay, seventh last year in overall defensive efficiency. I think he's pretty valuable in
he's
the middle.
He's better than he gets credit for, for sure.
Yeah. He's
If I'm DeAndre Ayton, too, I feel like we talk about DeAndre Ayton like he's averaging 8-6, right? The guy's averaged 18-10 over the last, few years, right around there. 18, 17, 10 rebounds. It's been pretty consistent. I'm sure he'd like his shots to go from the 13-15 range to 18-20, but you're still getting 18-10, and you already got paid. So I don't really know what we're talking about here sometimes with DeAndre Ayton being disgruntled. And I think you put him with Frank Vogel, and one of Frank's great skills is kind of connecting with guys, especially big men. Roy Hibbert, what was Roy Hibbert before Frank Vogel took over in Indiana when they started getting into the rule of verticality stuff and, featuring more offensively?
He had LeBron practicing floaters.
He got AD and Dwight to succeed together in the front court. I think Ayton would thrive under Frank Vogel in ways that, not that Monty Williams didn't have success with him, but that relationship was toxic. That was over. And if Monty Williams was back as the head coach, DeAndre Ayton could not be there. I think he can be there in Phoenix because Frank Vogel will have an entirely different approach to coaching DeAndre Ayton. And look, if you're already a max guy with multiple years left on your deal and you're averaging 18-10 and you're on a team that can compete for a championship, what exactly more do you need? What do you really want to be a Detroit Piston and average 20-14? Does that make that big a difference to you?
Can I chime in with this one thing just from the standpoint of also if you're Phoenix, another incentive I would think to try to find some home for him is a lot of times you kind of wait on trading people because you want them to build their value. Again, just go down the list of the three guys that are going to be running this offense for them. Where is Ayton going to be averaging 18-20 points in this offense and with that role in their queue? He's not going to really produce more than he has with this team. He might, certainly if he goes to Detroit or somewhere else, he very well could, probably would. It's not going to happen with Phoenix, so I don't see his value unless someone gets hurt, and that very well could be the case with Kevin Durant or Bradley Beal, as we know. But if it doesn't, you're not really expecting his production to take off once Chris Paul leaves the premises. I just don't really see what the upside of hanging on to him if you're hoping to be able to trade him later. If you're not and you want to work with them because you feel like Vogel will get through, that's completely fine. That's completely fair. Then let's drop this conversation about trade possibilities. And the Suns can do that whenever they want. Maybe that was the effort that they were making with the Chris Haynes report. I'm not sure, but we'll get a better sense of it soon.
I do think Ayton is talented. I've been a fan of his. I do think that the Monty Williams relationship got so bad. I wish you guys could have been there in the press conference room after Game 7 in 2022 when Monty was asked about Ayton and gave the very short answer about him. They just didn't talk that entire summer. I also agree. I think Vogel can get a great performance out of him. It's just going to be, I think, a constant question of, is the best possible version of Ayton that you get playing around these three high usage guys offensively worth not trying to turn him into two contracts. And I think, to Herring's point, the Suns can kind of put a rest to that if they stop shopping him. Moving on a little bit, I want to talk about a trade we got earlier this week. Not necessarily maybe the most shocking one or blockbuster trade, but I think one that's going to illustrate how teams are operating over the next couple weeks. The Atlanta Hawks, who last year just basically punted on Kevin Huerter after acquiring DeJounte Murray. Huerter goes on to have a great season in Sacramento. I get it. They acquired Murray. You know, how much playing time are we going to get? Blah, blah, blah. I thought they gave up on Kevin Huerter way too soon. Just basically dumped him for a first-round pick. Then, this week, they trade John Collins to the Utah Jazz in, again, what's just a salary dump. Like, not getting anything or anyone notable in return. They get Rudy Gay, who, frankly, is not going to contribute to a high-level playoff team at this point in his career. Collins has been on the trade market for so long, but I think the idea was always get someone back who's maybe a better complement next to Trae Young. You know, Atlanta has an expensive front court. They got Okongwu and Capella. Herring, I'll start with you. This trade bummed me out. I mean, Woj tweeted that, you know, Atlanta's front offense has the license to spend. I don't know how much I believe that. This has never been a tax-paying team. I don't know how much anyone bought into their conference finals run a couple years ago, but they were in the conference finals a couple years ago. What did you make of just kind of punting on John Collins here?
I mean, can we be real here for a minute? this was a team that, as they made their conference finals run and got, what was it, two games within an NBA finals berth, that their owner straight up said, "We ain't keeping this team together. It's getting expensive." Essentially said that. Which I mean, like, okay, it's not the first time an owner has said that. But this was a young team. Everybody on this team was young. Because of that, everybody had the potential to get paid. Even people like Cam Reddish were kind of salivating over the possibility of getting a bigger role, getting a bigger payday. John Collins was one of those people as well. It hasn't worked. Now, the fallacy with what they did is that because they decided they weren't going to pay all these guys, they started selling them off for... You know, despite the fact that these were talented guys. Cam Reddish, I think, is fine to move on from. He was probably the one I was the least high on anyway. They did that. I don't think it's come back to bite them necessarily. When we talk about Red Velvet, though, when we talk about Kevin Huerter, I mean, the guy was one of the best shooters in the league last year, certainly the first half of the year, and even after that, was one of the most, I think he might have been more efficient in handoff situations than Steph Curry was. Him and Keegan Murray both, by the way, Keegan Murray being a rookie, that was part of why the Kings took off and was a home run gamble, if you even want to call it a gamble, a home run move for the Kings to take a chance on someone that another team wasn't saying the guy's not good, he's not talented, he's not a fit. It wasn't any of those things. It was like, we don't want to pay him because he's expensive. He's going to be expensive. Okay, that's essentially what they did with Collins. The only exception is he was one of the guys they decided to keep, saying to themselves, okay, he's pricey, but if we have to trade him at some point, fine. We can trade him somewhere and someone else will take his deal. So they gave him, what was it, 25 a year? They gave him 25 a year. And then what do you know? As you make all these other moves around the edges, you make a pretty big move into DeJounte Murray. The same questions that we're having about Ayton to some extent about how many shots is this guy going to get in this offense? That question becomes true of John Collins as well. And what do you know? He goes from being a pretty decent three-point shooter in his career to shooting 29% last year. His value is rock bottom. And that's the problem here, is that you can't give guys away, essentially, that actually are pretty productive for you. Even if his production has fallen, okay.
I mean, he was dealing injuries last year. I don't think his shooting numbers last year indicate how talented he is.
And you're right. Particularly, I think it was a hand and a finger injury that he was dealing with. So that's going to impact the shooting. But my point is, like, don't talk to me about the idea that you're willing to, if you need to, you're willing to spend whatever is necessary, go into the tax. What if you, like, at a certain point, you need to show me something rather than tell me. And you have shown nothing to suggest that you're willing to spend all this money. You've actually done the complete opposite. Another team that sometimes has been guilty of that, oftentimes has been guilty of that, has been the Rockets, quite frankly, with the way that Tillman Fertitta has spoken We know that there's some cheap aspects of that operation. We know that. We've seen it. We've heard it. We've heard other people leave and talk about it. So I don't want to hear anything more about what they're willing to spend when they're making basically dollar-saving moves. You could have held on to John Collins longer than this to hope that he can recover his ability a little bit, or at least his statistics, so that you could trade him for more than what they got, which was peanuts. And you don't build a winner that way, and it's a little bit strange to see it. It's very strange after all this time we had of John Collins being on the trade block that this is what you – like, that's just poor management at that point, that you're not going to get anything for him. You might as well have held on to him, in my opinion.
Well, I would have liked to at least have seen John Collins with a full year with Quinn Snyder.
To see if
Snyder would emphasize Collins more than Nate McMillan did the last couple of years. I mean, that's the, you know, we can talk about the injuries, but, you know, his role was de-emphasized in Nate McMillan's offense the last couple of years. I mean, just look at the number of shots he's taken. You go to his second and third season when he was averaging right around 13, 14 shots per game. He was then averaging close to 20 points per game. The last couple of years, it's 10, 11, and he's averaging 16 points 2 years ago, 13 points last season. That's why I think this is a great deal for Utah. I mean, Utah gets a guy who's still only 25 years old. It's remarkable that John Collins is only 25. And now you get John Collins, you get Lauri Markkanen, you get Walker Kessler in that front court, all guys that are kind of mid-20-ish and younger, and you can build around that. Collins' contract is not awful, 3 years left that deal. And Utah's got to pay somebody anyway, so you might as well pay John Collins, you know, for the next couple of years. Atlanta, they're a play-in team, and maybe they're out of the playoffs entirely. I mean, the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray partnership did not look good, you know, together last year. You know, they've drafted well over the years, so maybe, you know, more of those pieces develop, but I don't see anything that tells me Atlanta is going to be any good. And I agree with you guys. Like, they, you know, you read about, you know, they got this giant trade exception now. Okay. I believe that they'll use that.
I put money on the fact that they're not going to use it. Exactly.
Yeah, I'd love to know the magical $25 million player that becomes available for them to trade for in the first place.
I mean, there might be, like, I think they could use it if they wanted to. And it doesn't have to be a $25 million guy. They can use a portion of it. But they are what they are. Like, you know, the team I saw last year and the team I saw the year before that, that's what Atlanta is. That's not the team that went to the conference finals a few years ago. This is what Atlanta is. And, you know, unless Trey kind of rediscovers his efficiency numbers and the second year of the Murray partnership looks a lot better, they're a play-in team. It just is what it is.
I don't disagree. I want to say a couple things. First, I love this trade for Utah. I think Will Hardy is quickly ascending to one of my favorite coaches in the league. I think he's one of the better coaches in the league. It's also, we've seen Lauri Markkanen have success in kind of this three big alignment before. It's a little bit of a remix version of what he was playing with in Cleveland when they had Mobley and Jared Allen. So I'm excited to see how that looks for Lowry. I agree. I think they could not have gotten him for less. They got him for practically free. I can't remember the last time a trade like this happened where you got someone this talented for an old player who wasn't part of your rotation and a second round pick. I think it's going to be a fantastic fit for Collins in Utah. And it just bums me out because I think this is what the NBA wants to a degree with this second apron and the new CBA is they want talent spread out, right? Like, how else does Utah go out and get a John Collins type? Otherwise, it doesn't really happen. The Trey conversation kind of leads me into this next player who I want to talk about because I think these two guys are both in very similar positions. That's Trae Young. And that's Karl Anthony Towns. I think both have maybe, I wouldn't say they've hit their ceiling, but I think their teams are maybe growing a little bit impatient with what they can deliver in terms of postseason success. I think Atlanta is at least going to give Trae Young some time with Quinn Snyder. I know Trae Young's dad is very excited about what Quinn Snyder can do for his career, but let's go to Minnesota, for example. They re-sign Naz Reid to a three-year extension. I think he's...
I'd like to say for the record that you wanted to lead with the Naz Reid.
Listen,
I'm a Naz Reid fan.
We
just put that out there. Like, when I read your version of the rundown, you wanted to lead agency show with the Naz Reid extension.
Let's not disrespect Naz Reid, who I would argue...
Let's not overly respect him either.
It's fair enough. I would argue, based on contract, he's kind of the most valuable asset the Wolves have at center, if you're into asset talk. Should the Wolves trade Karl Towns? Let's just get to it. Let's not beat around the bush. Manic, should they trade Karl Towns?
No, because his value is not what it was a year ago. He played 29 games last year. His three-point shooting numbers dropped. His field goal percentage numbers dropped. His scoring numbers dropped. So he is still young enough. What is he, 25, 26, 27 years old, going to be 28 right around the start of next season. I don't think you deal an asset like that unless you're overwhelmed. But at this stage, you're not going to be overwhelmed by offers for Karl Towns. Plus, I mean, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I would like to see more than a 20-some-odd game sample size of this group together. I would. Not to vindicate Tim Connelly for that deal, which could still go down as one of the worst deals in modern NBA history. But, you know, we didn't see much of it. You know, Karl Towns had, one of the worst lower leg injuries we've ever seen with, you know, the time it kept him out of the lineup. And you know, it sabotaged any chance he had of developing on-court chemistry with Rudy Gobert. And you know, you got Anthony Edwards, another year older. We'll see what else they can do, you know, to kind of add to that mix in free agency. But I just still like to see that group together. I mean, I don't think that group is championship level. I never did because, you know, playing two bigs in today's NBA is pretty challenging. You often don't succeed with those types of lineups. But I don't think it's as bad as what they were last year. I think if you can keep Gobert and Towns together on the floor for 60-some-odd games, keep Anthony Edwards on the floor for that amount of time, let's see. Let's see what they got. I think selling low right now would be a mistake for Minnesota.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I can't pivot out of what I just said about Atlanta and what they just failed at and then say trade Towns when he's essentially at the lowest value that he's had since he's been in the league. First of all, I think he's still a really good player. I mean, it has to be frustrating for any number of reasons for Wolves fans from the standpoint of the postseason production, the foul outs, the near foul outs, the decision making. And then obviously when someone is injured, and it hasn't always been injuries for him, there was the COVID, the time that he missed, you know, and I think also understandably there he was hit very hard by COVID from the standpoint of just his family. It's been a strange few years for him. I don't think he was the one that asked for the Rudy Gobert situation. And let's be really honest here. That looks like potentially such a seismic mistake that it's going to speed up the timeline on figuring stuff out very quickly. I don't think that the question of should they trade Towns was coming up nearly as much as it is now, because I think most teams, most people would be thrilled with a core of Towns and Anthony Edwards. I still think most people would be happy with that. Gobert is kind of the one that was added to this and all of a sudden adds this sort of pressure of like, is this going to work? If it's not, we have to pivot. You can't pivot by trading him because if you're Tim Connelly, that's too much of an acknowledgement that you effed up, quite frankly. Also, you would get very, very, very little back for him relative to what you traded to get him. The Walker Kessler part of this looks ridiculous, you know, at this point. You would have been much better served just having him and letting him develop with this group. But at this point, you have to let Towns kind of restore some of his value. If this season doesn't work out and it's with them being healthy, so be it. You figure that out. I think that even at Mike Conley's age, you might benefit from having his wisdom and his know-how for a full season as opposed to having D'Angelo Russell play poorly for a good chunk of the season, not be a good fit defensively with this group. And who knows? Anthony Edwards, I had him on my all-NBA team. Some of that, yeah, sure, was because he played so much more than all the other guys that were up for it. But he also was damn good, and he's young and is, you know, presumably going to get better. So I'm fine with taking more of a wait-and-see approach with it. I think you need to do that if only to let Towns's value rehab a little bit. But, you know, I'm also hopeful that, okay, you got to see what wasn't working before Towns was hurt. You had a really, really not-so-great exit from the playoffs, but you also had some really weird stuff happen at the end of the year, whether it was with Naz Reid's injury.
The McDaniels injury.
Yeah, crazy. You never want to have somebody miss time and break their hand because they're punching a wall or whatever. It's a really, really talented team. I mean, we got all the way to this portion without even talking about McDaniels. They're a very talented team that is capable of a lot more than what they did, and they have a different point guard. You know, one of my least favorite point guards, just from like a running the show standpoint, certainly on a younger team, to someone that is a veteran that, you know, again, he's not great anymore. You know, he's not Mike Conley in his prime, but he's still very smart. He's not going to lose games for you with his decision making the way that sometimes D'Angelo Russell was capable of doing. So I want to see him. I would like to see it. I'll put it that way. And I would like to see Towns get an opportunity to kind of bounce back to who he was prior to all this, without the immediate pressure of trade the guy, because I don't think that he was the one that was the most at fault for the situation that they had last year.
Did you just hit us with the Monique gif right there?
I did.
Herring, where, I did. I would like to see. Well, I'll make the case for trading Towns, since both of you are cowards, apparently, with this wait and see, patient, kumbaya nonsense. Not what I come to this podcast for. Let me just say this. I think Anthony Edwards is incredible. You mentioned Herring. You voted him all NBA. I think he's a star right now. I think he's someone who's ready to take the next step. If you're the Wolves, I think you have to build this team not around Karl Towns, but around Anthony Edwards. And I'm looking at Towns as, this is my best chance to trade someone, because they don't have to do the Dame Lillard type expected trade, or, you know, they don't have to do the Donovan Mitchell type trade where they're looking for a bunch of picks and stuff in return. I think they could use Towns to go out and get an all-star. Use him to go out and get veteran, championship-ready rotation pieces. I'm not saying it's going to turn them into a contender, but it might be their best chance
Tell me who.
I'm going to throw a name. What about Paul George?
Okay, you're going to trade for Paul George, and then Paul George is going to want an extension, or else you're going to lose Paul George in a year. So you're going to trade Karl Anthony Towns for either 1 year of Paul George or 4 years of potentially broken down Paul George. That's what you're telling me.
I just think that they're not going to go out and sign a free agent. Anthony Edwards is going to be too good for them to tank.
They're not going to sign a free agent because nobody signs in Minnesota when
they have
other
options. That's my point. I just think that Towns, I think, is their most valuable way to get a legit co-star for Anthony Edwards. And I don't think Towns is the guy.
If you offer Towns for Paul George, like Lawrence Frank would, you know, fly Paul George personally to get called out. Like that doesn't, I wouldn't do that. That's because you're not, if it was 5 years ago, maybe, but you're going to lock yourself into an early to mid 30s Paul George who wants a new contract. Like, how does that get you to any place further than what you would get with Towns? Now, you got to keep this guy there and at least see what you got for one season. You know, if he can stay healthy, his value is only going to go up. Hell, don't even go a full season. How about you go to like the trade deadline?
Yeah,
see.
You know what? And to Mannix's point, this isn't even the part that I'm agreeing with from his standpoint. Rehabbing Towns' value is important, but I disagree from one standpoint. I agree, sure, that if you've got a great opportunity to land a legit co-star right now, right then and there with him, absolutely you go for it. But I also think because it's Minnesota and because, as you're acknowledging, nobody really wants to go sign up to play there, I do think you have to be looking for picks back for this guy, because that's how you build a team in Minnesota. So
that's not the Clippers, that's for sure.
They don't have much to trade in that way. But I do think that you have to be mindful of, you just gave up so much to get Gobert in picks. You're Minnesota. You're not going to be a free agent destination. Go get some of those picks back. And you know you can't get it through trading Gobert again. So Towns really, unless you're going to trade Edwards, at which point you might as well just start your franchise over, which you would be. I think you do have to be looking for picks back for him. But ideally, here's the other thing. If Towns is playing the way he's played before, you could get picks and a star. And that, you know, like, that's why I think you do have to let him rehab his value a little bit, because we know he's not as bad as he was. Not even as bad.
He's someone that
normally plays, and he's someone that is an all NBA talent. Like, normally we could slot in the three. This was why it was so interesting that Sabonis was all NBA. Normally we know exactly who the top three centers are going to be for all NBA, and Towns is normally that guy. And so that's what he is.
It's less about Towns' individual talent, which I agree is very good, and more so his fit with Edwards and Gobert. I mean, they have to account for the Gobert F up. I'll throw one more fake insane trade out there.
But how do you know it's an F up? Because they didn't play together. Like, they didn't get any opportunity.
You're bullish. You're buying Gobert Town stock.
I'm not bearish yet. I'd like to see what they do. I'm certainly more bullish on Gobert and Towns as part of your team than 33-year-old Paul George, who's going to opt out of that contract after next season faster than it took for him to get to Minnesota. That's for sure.
Here's one more fake trade that I don't know if it will make you more or less angry than you are currently.
I'm going to let Mannix take the first slice of this because he's ready, boy.
Would you offer Karl Towns for Zion?
Yeah, but if I'm Minnesota, would I offer Karl Towns for Zion? Yeah, I would do that.
Okay, now.
Because, yeah, look, that actually isn't.
Not the worst.
Look at Rohan looking for validation. I see.
You can see Mannix thinking so about happy. It, though. Mannix is coming around to it.
No, I mean, look.
He was ready to pounce before you
said
that.
I thought you were going to say, like, Julius Randle and picks. I thought you were going to go there. I really did. Look, I think that makes a degree of sense. but, look, Zion's a five. You know, and I think it's less likely that Zion can play opposite Rudy Gobert than Towns playing opposite Rudy Gobert. Like, Towns, at least, there's a three-point threat. Zion is not a three-point threat. So now you're talking about having two bigs that are paint-oriented. You know, I would probably do it if I was Minnesota because Zion's under contract for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. He's 23 years old. You'd be buying low on him as well. And I'd probably do it if I was the Pelicans because, you know, it gets you away from what is looking more and more like a toxic relationship with Zion and gives you a guy that, you know, I don't know if he has the same ceiling as Zion, but he certainly has a pretty high one. And you all of a sudden, you get a piece that doesn't put you in a rebuilding situation because you can't rebuild if you're New Orleans because you've got Brandon Ingram in his prime. You've got CJ McCollum on the back end of his prime. You've got guys that are ready to win now. Herb Jones, you know, just name, you know.
Mm-hmm. I like that for the Pelicans a lot, Rohan.
Yeah.
I'd like it there. That's but again, nasty team. Like, you can't. The reason that Tim Connelly traded for Rudy Gobert, you know, at the time, was because there was the potential to have a paint-oriented center and move Towns to four and have him be a three-point shooting four. You'd have to move Gobert too. It couldn't be just. You'd have to have Zion being the five with that group. Mm. You couldn't keep Gobert around. And if there's two moves to be made, sure, I could see that happening. Trade Gobert for parts, which would be an amazing white flag to wave at this stage, but. If you did that, yeah, I could buy that from Minnesota's perspective.
I just more and more cannot believe Tim
Go out
Connelly.
On top on that one. Yeah. Go out on top.
I will.
Don't give me another
trade.
Don't give me another trade.
I know when to stop. I promise. I just for the life of me cannot believe Tim Connelly, who I have so much respect for, made that Gobert trade. Still kind of a shocker to me. I want to
wait and see what it turns out to be. I can't, like, we are so impatient today that I just look. Karl Towns went out in what, December? Like, how many games they have before he went out of the lineup? Like, I want to see it.
I want to talk about Mannix. You mentioned this player in your column. I think he is he's like Bruce Brown plus to me. I think whatever team signs him is going to be very excited about acquiring this player. And that's Grant Williams, who I think left the door open to a return to the Celtics in some comments he made recently. The team does have the ability to re-sign Grant Williams. He's a restricted free agent. They can match any offer he gets. Obviously, the Celtics already made the Porzingis trade. Let's start there. What's the Grant Williams market looking like? The Kings have opened up. They could effectively, I think, replace Harrison Barnes with Grant Williams. We get Grant Williams plus another guy. I think every team should be trying to sign this guy. The Celtics should have played him more, in my opinion. What's the Grant Williams market looking like, and where do you think he's likely to end up?
I think the Grant Williams market is going to be strong on Friday. I think teams like Indiana, Sacramento, who you mentioned, other teams that could be looking to do a sign and trade will be talking to him. You know, he didn't have the greatest end to last season, but, you know, before the All-Star break, he was shooting 41% from three. And let's not forget, the Celtics would not have been in the 2022 finals if not for Grant Williams.
Nope.
His game 7 against Milwaukee saved them You know, Jason Tatum had the great game six. It was Grant Williams who had the great game seven. He's still in his mid-20s. I think there will be a robust market for Grant Williams. And if I'm Boston, I either bring him back or I get something for him, because you're crazy if you're the Celtics and you go into next season with Horford, Porzingis, and Rob Williams, because one of those guys, at least, is going to be hurt or out of the lineup for periods of time. Like, it might be, I'd put the over-under at like 15 games that all three of them play in next season. Horford, maybe by design, he's 37 years old, and I would expect him to be in that kind of 45 to 50 range for games next season, you know, again, by design. But Rob Williams is constantly hurt. Porzingis was healthy last year, but I think I've said this to you guys before, like, contract year guys scare me. Guys that play through pain and play through whatever because they know they're in a contract year. Porzingis, I believe, is going to get a two-year extension from Boston at some point in the next couple of weeks. So he's going to have some financial security. You know, does that impact his willingness to play through pain and play through stuff? I don't know, but I'd be wary about counting on those three guys being healthy and available at all times. Grant Williams, he's durable, he's versatile. You know, he is improved as a three-point shooter, you know, virtually every single year. He was excised from the lineup last year in part because he wouldn't shoot as much as Joe Mazzulla wanted him to. Joe Mazzulla, you know, wants like 50 or 60 three-point attempts per game. You know, Grant Williams at times last season was, you know, gun-shy when it came to shooting threes, and that's what forced him out of the lineup to begin with. So if I'm Boston, I know there are tax complications here. You probably have to find a way to get off Malcolm Brogdon's contract, and that's going to be complicated. But I'd want Grant Williams back in the mix. I think he is an ideal fit for that team. He's popular in the locker room. I'd want to find a way to bring him back.
Herring, is there a team you'd like to see him play for specifically?
I think Mannix just mentioned the Kings. Or no, you was it you that mentioned
I think
the Kings?
We both did.
I mean, it would be a great fit for them, although it's funny. I always make a point to follow a lot of fans from the teams that I'm writing about, particularly if I'm writing about a team like the Kings that, you know, the fan base has kind of been through a lot between the team almost moving, the fact that they've been through a record-long playoff drought, and then this year the joy they experienced in making the playoffs finally, and kind of getting center stage a little bit and getting a shot to take down the defending champs. So I got in contact with some of them about a story that I was writing about the Kings this past year, and I've continued to follow them on Twitter, and seeing the fear in those fans about the possibility of them re-signing Harrison Barnes was really, really interesting. But also, Harrison Barnes just was not very good in the playoffs last year. He struggled a little bit at times. He had moments where he was solid. He's generally been very solid, but he's starting to get a little bit older. And
man,
if he
makes that three in game six, what a completely different conversation it is.
I mean, you know what? Like, obviously, it would have changed the narrative on that series. They maybe, you know, they went to seven games. They maybe win that series if that happens.
I believe that was the winner. That was there.
You're
was
right,
three,
because
yeah.
they were up. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I forget about that. So from that standpoint, it's challenging because he's someone that, you know, at this point, if you're looking at him or Grant Williams and their skill sets, he's maybe even a little bit bigger than Harrison Barnes is, certainly in terms of size and just weight and everything, and can guard up a position probably more easily than Harrison Barnes can at this point in his career. I think that would be a really nice move for them. I also think, and I don't know if you're going to get to this part of kind of the rundown you sent out, we talked about this a little bit on a separate call. Man, I don't think he has it in him to do it, especially now that, you know, a certain trade was made. But Draymond in Sacramento, Draymond in Portland would be so fascinating. I mean, obviously Sacramento, because you're talking about the proximity, the fact that they just played against each other in the playoffs, the stomp to Sabonis. There'd be so much at play with that. But also just Draymond starting over somewhere else would be fascinating. But assuming that Sacramento doesn't do that, or, you know, that Draymond doesn't end up somewhere else, I think Grant Williams would be a great fit for a team like Sacramento. He shoots well enough to be a part of that group. So he's not necessarily hindering you from that standpoint, as long as he does shoot, as Chris was saying, but defensively, a team that desperately needs more help, not only on the wings, but also in rim protection, too.
Yeah, Sacramento is going to be an interesting team to see how they approach what they do with their cap space. You know, up to $30 million, do they kind of make a home run offer for Draymond? Is there a guy that they can go out and try to get?
I don't think it matters for Draymond. I really, I'd be surprised.
I'm assuming he's going to go back to the Warriors.
Quick deal already agreed to kind of things.
Right.
Even with Bob Myers gone, like Steve Kerr's there, Steph Curry's there, Clay Thompson's there, and I have not heard one whisper of skepticism.
I'd be surprised too.
You know, I've seen some. You know, it's today's day and age. I've seen some of the Twitter reporting about like I could take meetings. Like I don't see it. That could be one of those 6:01 p.m. Eastern kind of deals that gets announced.
Yeah, it's more of a fever dream just to see what it would look like, because it would just shake up the league in such a way. Even without the Warriors being the defending champs anymore, that fundamentally changes the face of that team. It fundamentally changes the face of the Kings, the Blazers. All of a sudden, the conversation about Dame dies down finally, you know, if you get him to Portland. It's just more interesting and intriguing if it happens, but it doesn't mean that that's likely to happen or that we're expecting that to happen, certainly.
That was most of what I wanted to discuss today. We had a mild bit of breaking news that I'll float to you guys if you have any reaction whatsoever. But Nikola Vucevic headed back to the Bulls on a 3-year, $60 million deal. Anyone have an opinion on this?
Where's the fart noise machine? Like, I mean, what? As we talk about the Hawks and kind of like the what are we doing conversation.
Everyone's waiting for the Bulls to blow it up.
I mean, but like, this is an example. And maybe there's something to be said or written about at some point just about the doubling down on things that clearly haven't worked. The Bulls have not only watched the Magic draft some really good players with the picks that the Bulls gave them in exchange for Vucevic, but he doesn't fit with those two lead guards that they have, or wings, you know, to put it, with LaVine and DeRozan. Maybe if they trade one of them or both of them, then, okay, Vucevic is not like he's a worthless player. He's got value in this league. He's among the leaders every year in double-doubles. He's still a good, solid player. He just very clearly doesn't fit with that team. And this is as middle-of-the-road a team as there is in the league. To give slight credit to their front office, I think they would have had a really good team in this league if Lonzo Ball doesn't get hurt. They were a really good team. They were in first place for the majority of that season. That first season that they were together, and stuff went off the rails entirely once he was lost. Okay, but now what? Like, okay, if you tell me you're going to go add Monty Morris to this group somehow, I don't know what you do it with because they don't have much to trade. But if you're going to do that, okay, we can have a conversation, because then they have a starting guard, a starting caliber guard to go alongside that group. Okay, but just to keep this group together, unless you're trading one of your key pieces, I just don't understand the idea of extending Vooch other than to double down on something that didn't work. And the reason I'm phrasing it that way is because Arturis Karnisovas was essentially asked about this, and he said, I think that trade worked out well for us. And I don't think you can say that with a straight face. You can't say it to people that I know in Chicago, to my friends and stuff, with a straight face, because they all look at that and say, like, sure, he's been okay, but would we have rather had a Franz Wagner or something like that in the draft, or, you know, or been able to move those picks for somebody else or something that worked better? And they obviously would prefer that as fans. So, you know, I think the Bulls know the reality of it, but they just have been very inflexible at this point. This is another team that really doesn't want to spend, by the way, as we talk about Atlanta. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they do something. Maybe they do get off LaVine at some point this summer, and then there's a different conversation to be had. But I just am not particularly interested in seeing Vucevic back with that team, given the makeup of that roster and the fact that he doesn't seem to fit with that group.
I don't really have a problem with it, only because they didn't have any room to replace him.
Right.
Like, if he goes, it's not like it would open up this glut of cap space that they could have used to sign a bunch of different guys. Your $20 million per year salary for a durable big man like Vucevic is eminently tradable. And he has been like a picture of consistency the last couple of years. I mean, identical numbers basically the last 2 years, and he played all 82 games last season. So I just think you're not going to win with him on the team, like, you know, this group, I agree, Herring is not going anywhere. Yeah. But if you have him under a 3-year deal at $20 million per season, there will be a market for a guy like that. You can flip him to Dallas. You can flip him anywhere for yeah. There's lots of places.
Dallas would be incredible. We're going to score every time down the floor.
But can we have the conversation about what Chris just said? Because that's actually my kind of just like me being flummoxed by it. It's not even just this. It's an accumulation of all of it of why. And there were a couple teams that did this. The Raptors were guilty of it too. Other than going out to get Poeltl, why let your roster stand pat at the trade deadline for a team that I guess they almost made the playoffs as the 8th seed. They almost beat Miami, but they were a middle of the road team the whole season. They knew Lonzo wasn't coming back. They've already told us Lonzo's not coming back this season. They had Vooch. They had LaVine. They had DeRozan. They had Caruso that was a first team all defense member. They also had other guys that they could have dealt, by the way, too, off their bench that they just decided not to trade. And it's like, okay, granted, they're expirings, so maybe you don't want to get off of them unless you're getting a good deal back, but go get some assets for what you just lost. And I think that there is, to circle all the way back to go full circle with it, to Gobert, I think that there are a lot of like kind of face-saving gestures that teams do because they're like, well, look, we can't acknowledge that this was maybe not our best moment. So we're not going to trade this guy because that would be admitting that it wasn't our best moment. We all know it wasn't your best moment. That doesn't mean you just stay with someone forever. It's not to say that bringing him back is like a fatalistic mistake. It's just why keep them together last year and the year before that when you could have gotten something at some point. You could have gotten something toward a playoff run last year. And I'm really at a loss for why you would just stick everybody together and not break them up at all. At least Caruso had a very high value, I think, last season.
I was not prepared for how much this was going to make Herring angry.
It just doesn't make sense. I'm as annoyed, but you know what? It's funny. I was the same way with the Hawks, though, where it just doesn't make sense to me why you do that, where you get rid of him for nothing.
I do think all their guys are still going to be tradable. I think Vooch arguably have more value now that he's not an expiring deal. Yeah. So
we'll see.
Yeah, that was more spirited Bulls talk than I really bargained for, and I respect it. I love the passion. I love it. That will do it for today's episode, guys. We need to let Herring go cool off.
It's just bad management, yep, though, with a lot of these teams. Yeah. I have limited patience for it. I have limited patience for the Hawks when they say that they're willing to spend. Come on, man. Let's go. Come on.
We will be back sometime next week after free agency is open to hopefully discuss some crazy moves. Until then, everyone, enjoy your summer.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.